PPI.org.
Roy, di dekhi hawen. Roy, di bagu kuchray. Roy, Roy, inda baulalay. Roy, Roy, dehra bar qabli. Roy, Roy, bar daar kafud. Roy, bar
ankukri. Welcome back. This is Abdulrazak Bihi from Somali Link Radio. I hope everyone is staying home or social distancing. It's really crazy times, but what's amazing about all this fear and all these, you know, things that are happening in our times with COVID-19 is the other side of it is how it's bringing our communities together, how it's bringing people to help each other, how our frontline people, our nurses, our doctors, our healthcare providers, our EMT, ambulance drivers, our emergency medical team, our firefighters, our police, everyone, elected officials, the government, the imams, the pastors, and the reverends, and all these people are pulling in to help feed people, to help take care of people. And that's the side I love to see it, that we look at while we are locked down at home or social distancing. It's very important, very, very important for all of us to come over this, to continue to hear the messages from our healthcare providers saying stay away from each other, don't gather in small places. Social distance, keep cleaning your hands. As you can see, it's right here. Keep cleaning your hands, you know, follow the instructions. I'm not saying that because I've got Paul again, who is our healthcare leaders in the Cedar Riverside community, people centers, clinics in our community, who is really on the front line of this community in West Bank and Cedar Riverside in terms of educating the community, reaching out to the community. This clinic sees about 10,000 people, mostly immigrants and elders from this community and around the communities. So let me welcome Paula. Welcome.
Hi, Bihi. Thanks so much for having me on today.
Thank you. And we are going today to talk about several things. First, I and Paula will discuss about COVID-19 and the situation and what's going on. Not first, that's second, actually. But we'll also talk about the new addition of services into our community by People's Center Clinic, which is the COVID-19 testing drive-through testing, which I just, you know, took pictures of it. And also, we'll talk about but first, we'll talk about, we don't want to forget a fatal fire of 6:30 that took place recently in Cedar Riverside. I want to talk about how this committee, who are Darul Hijr Mosque, Cedar River, People's Center Clinic, they were the front leaders, but there were about 28 or 30, I don't know, Paula knows, of community leaders of all sorts of people who were really working on this together, and other organizations like SNAPI and other Muslim organizations that really helped and donate food. But we want to give you overview next 40, 50 minutes about the 6:30 and what has taken place, how did the community come together, and how did they really take care of the victims of the fire and the residents of those buildings. And at the end, we'll talk about the U.S. Census and the rates in our communities, especially our community is part of those undercounted, extremely undercounted communities, last census and many other census years. But this year also, COVID is another addition of the barriers that we were facing to get counted. So that's the end of it we'll talk about. Paula, welcome and love. Let's chat about the wonderful work you led about the fatal fire in 6:30. Mm.
Well, yeah, that was... Well, it was a huge, huge undertaking. And I think you absolutely are right to acknowledge that while we were in a position that we could hold this fundraising ability and be able to just get the word out in the community, because there were so many other people and organizations that were all right there on the front lines that were helping the residents. And I know you were there pulling people together. People are delivering food and just all hands on deck. And so certainly our clinic had some presence from the providers there to help, especially our behavioral health providers, that we were there trying to help people because it's an extremely traumatic event, but we wanted to do more. And so that's where the idea of the fund came from. That's why we wanted to raise the funds and give all of them to those who were impacted, that none of it stayed with us. And so that was huge. And it was incredible bringing everyone together and working with Neuralhedra and what they were able to connect and be able to just pull together these different folks. And you're right, there were like 30 different representatives from organizations. And I was fairly new at the time. And so I was still getting to know everyone. And that was incredible to see how warm and open and welcoming everyone was about cooperating and working together. And we learned a lot about how maybe to respond. Unfortunately, these things do happen. Now we're in COVID-19, that, you know, we just have to figure out how we can come together. And fortunately, even now, in looking at COVID-19, this same group, you know, now we all know how to pull together and how to do it collaboratively. So, it was enormous. I think distributing the funds, connecting with the residents, there were so many other organizations. I know that Volunteers of America, the work they do with senior services and the high-rise was critical to help us connect and be able to get these residents what they needed. So that was huge. The people who contributed, that was amazing. Over almost $90,000 were raised in just about a month. And, you know, I still have people that ask if we need any additional funds and how people are doing. So it was, it was incredible to see everyone. And, you know, that's in large part to the good folks at GiveMN, that they do a lot of fundraising resources and they do Give to the Max Day. They actually promoted and pushed out this appeal for the fire fund under their banner and their name. And that was huge. And they're doing the same work again. I don't know if people have heard about it, but they are doing something similar to Give to the Max Day, but for an entire week, starting this May 1st through May 8th. And organizations like People Center, they're really encouraging people, give now, give what you can, so that we can respond to this. And so we'll be promoting that and talking about that, because that definitely helps us in our response to these crises when they happen.
Thank you. Now I would like you, Paula, since you and Wally from Neuralhedra and other leaders were really, there was a structure there. Mm-hmm. You getting a lot of donations from People Center Clinic, close to $90,000 in such a short time. Yeah. First, what would you be able to see where donations were coming from? Were they just from Minneapolis, Minnesota, around the country?
So definitely most are from Minnesota. I mean, this is a state that wants to wrap its arms around its residents, and you could definitely feel that with the response. But we had donations from out of country. So it's amazing. I mean, it was it was almost 1,600, 1,700 people that donated just to that effort. And, you know, that's just the funds that we brought in. And the average donation was about $50. So that just shows you, like, everybody chipping in what they can, what a huge difference that can make. But in addition to the funds, and certainly the work that Wally and the Moths did, and connecting with different groups and then Snappy, that there were tons of donated items too, of coats and clothing and furniture and food and anything. Because, I mean, as you know, with the fire, that the damage is so significant. I mean, you have to replace furniture, your clothing. We were fortunate that Amazon reached out to us and they provided air purifiers, which I know were extremely, extremely valuable. They gave masks, which I'm sure not only helped then, but probably were very helpful now as we're dealing with COVID-19, that they gave so many of those. So it was a lot of people coming together. And yeah, that structure and the group, it was really important to work collaboratively to know how to distribute this in an equitable way, where we were really able to help people in the ways they needed it. And the first priority for us was to make sure that the folks who unfortunately lost a loved one in that fire, that we were able to help them with those end of life expenses, because those can just be so significant and so very difficult. And we wanted to make sure we could support that. And we were able to help everyone with that who was impacted. Then we just looked to see who was most impacted on those floors closest to the fire, and then just spread out from there throughout the whole building to help folks.
How many organizations, as much as I can remember, I will give them a shout out and thank them mm-hmm. later together. But coming back to the structure, yeah. what I remember, the group, the leadership categorized mm-hmm. the issue into three parts. Mm-hmm. One was about the death. And how many people died?
So let's see, it was five people that we lost. And there was one resident on that floor who just wasn't there at the time. Mm-hmm. But he did lose a significant amount of everything. Mm-hmm. And then there was another woman and her personal care assistant who were also on the floor, but were able to get out. And then they were, of course, put into a different unit. There were those five families that we were working with directly very first thing.
And were they all Somali or East African?
No, yeah, not at all. So, we had a young man who his parents live here in the Eden Prairie area, and that he was white. We had a Korean gentleman who was the gentleman who was not there. So certainly it was representative of the folks who just live in the building.
So I remember the group, the leadership has categorized the issues first to take care of the death, mm-hmm. help those families take care of the expenses. Then there was everyone who lived around the fire area. Mm-hmm. The fire started on the 14th floor, and it was also heavily impacted on 13th and 15th, above and correct. Below. So I think that was the survivors were the second bill yes. of the structure. Mm-hmm. And I remember yeah. then it was everybody else in the building. Tell the audience, share it with the audience, how much it costed for those people and what kind of burials they had. Were they all buried here?
As far as what barriers, I'm sorry?
Were all the five victims, I remember they were taken care of. Can you explain that meeting at the mosque, collecting all those families together who lost families, because that was your priority, number one.
Absolutely. The mosque did a fantastic job, and Imam Sharif being there to kind of convene and host this gathering. And we had the American Red Cross was very involved because they provide some direct emergency assistance as well. But we just tried to split up our team and to meet with each family privately and try to talk with them about what needs there were. I mean, there was one family that it was in the will for the woman who passed away that she wanted to return to her homeland. She wanted to go back to Somalia and be buried there. And we were able to make that happen. And it was a very difficult time. I mean, those are hard conversations to have. They really are. And I felt for the folks because it all happened just so recently. But it was important. And we wanted to be able to try to make them whole in those expenses as quickly as possible.
And there was also the victim, the Caucasian victim's family that was also mm-hmm. there in the mosque with other families. Mm-hmm. Could you guess their feelings, what their families, their feelings? I mean, I remember a quote from the Star Tribune. I don't remember exactly what that lady said, but it was touching.
I think it was just feeling that the community really cared. I know that she just realized just what a wonderful community her son lived in. She was so amazed. Every family, everyone we talked with was so profoundly moved by these contributions from people who did not know them that wanted to try to support them during such a personal and tragic time. I think it was really eye-opening for the folks who were involved to realize just how much people wanted to help.
Wonderful. And the second structure was taking care of the folks who were living around on the 14th floor, the rest mm-hmm. whoever surviving on the 14th floor, and the rest who survived from the 15th and 13th. Mm-hmm. Share with the audience some of that experience.
Well, I spent I think for probably after we raised the funds and we tried to turn it around as quickly as we could, we had to, this isn't what we're in the business of, right? Doing disaster relief.
Yeah.
But we wanted to figure it out and we wanted to do it right. Mm-hmm. And that was really important to us. And so I would be there with our leadership team and we just would sit in the community room of the building and we prioritized those individuals you mentioned. Mm-hmm. And we had individual conversations with them to understand just how they were impacted. And you know, a big part of that was hearing them, I think, because it was traumatizing and there's so much that happened and they lost so much. And so being able to really care and be there and then determine how we were going to be able to distribute those funds in a way that they could get them and they could reimburse themselves for expenses they had to replace a bed or clothing or anything. And so it was a very personal conversation with the folks. And I think that from then on, you know, I think I was at the building about once a week, at least visiting with folks.
Yeah, it's an experience that I believe it will stay with us for life. You know, there's always goodness after a disaster in Minnesota. There is always that other experience that really doesn't leave you and gives you hope that complete strangers will come together and help each other and take care of each other. So that was amazing. And I remember the third structure was everybody else who was affected. That's 193 apartments building, if I'm right. And we basically reached out to everyone who was not out of the country. And what kind of experience was that?
Well, it was overwhelming, I think, that because you continue to hear someone might have been four floors up from the fire, and yet the smoke damage was pretty significant, and they can't get the smell out. And just so there still was, everyone was impacted. Everyone had to race out in the middle of the night. Everyone is frightened whenever that happens. And so it really affected everyone in some way. And so being able to have those conversations, and this is where we have to give a tremendous shout out to our friends at Volunteers of America, because the social services, the folks there, we could not have reached the residents because we didn't have access to that information. Yeah. It's private, you know? And so having to arrange for us to be available and meet one-on-one, we did our due diligence to make sure that people could verify proof of residence, and I did them just to make sure that we knew that we were stewarding the dollars appropriately, which there was no issue with that. And everyone seemed to understand. But again, we were all trying to figure it out on our how was the best way to do this and how to get those funds directly to people for what they needed.
Yeah.
But it took several weeks. It did, because it's just going and meeting with that many people and having a one-on-one conversation. It just took a while. And you were a huge help, too, in helping to organize folks and, you know, helping us to kind of guide through that process. So we definitely couldn't have done it. I couldn't have done it without you either, B.
I remember we were planning, as soon as you get on board with People's Center Clinic, you immediately reached out to me and we were planning community tour. So you wanted to really know who you're serving, how you can serve better, like Karina did. So you wanted to meet with all the providers in the community, the real people who live here, you know, want to go to the local mall, local the mosques, you know, visit the elders, the Korean center, Brian Cole Community Center, you know, all the places that the community use. And it never happened. One time, I didn't make it because it was also cold.
It was snowing.
I got to be honest, I didn't make it that day. I don't know what happened. But there was some, God had a plan, you know. And then before we did hit the road to do the tour, this disaster happened. Mm-hmm. And suddenly you were at the center of it. What kind of experience for you with that? And I remember I used to joke. I said, now you don't need the tour. You know better than I do now.
I still want the walking tour. I still want that. I would like to go and what feels like a more normal kind of interaction. And I've had a chance to do more of that.
Yeah.
No, it was overwhelming. I mean, I won't lie. That was to learn just how many groups there are, all the different organizations that come together, and who plays what role, how we fit into that, how we work together. just learning it. But, you know, I think for me, there was kind of a beauty to it.
Yeah.
And that it was the best way to learn because we were doing the work together.
Yes.
And for me, that just, that was a fabulous way to be able to connect. It was really authentic.
Yes.
And be able to build that trust. I've mentioned to other people before that I think that I wouldn't have the relationships or feel as comfortable reaching out for help or to collaborate or to partner with people had I not gone through this experience. I think it would have taken, this is what would have taken a year, right, to build trust and relationships. But all of a sudden, this was the priority and everything else had to just be put to the side. So I'm, it's a horribly tragic event that happened. I'm very grateful for the meaningful connections that I've been able to make on behalf of People Center and the community.
Thank you. And we will be right back. I'm talking to Paula Gwynn from People Center Clinic, and we are talking about our response, the community's response to the late recent fatal fire at 630 building in Cedar Riverside. And we'll talk more about COVID and other issues as soon as we hear this message.
Lorsqu'il s'agit de bâtir des communautés, tous les Africains comptent. Il est temps de répondre à l'appel. Faites-vous compter pour ce recensement de 2020. C'est simple. Comptez juste toutes les personnes vivant avec vous et ne vous inquiétez pas. Les informations personnelles restent confidentielles. Nos chiffres ont une incidence sur le financement des besoins communautaires tels que les logements abordables.
Participez au recensement en ligne, par téléphone ou par courrier. Façonnez votre avenir. Commencez ici à 2020census.gov, payé par le Bureau de recensement des États-Unis.
Welcome back. This is Abdurizak Bihi from Somali Link Radio. If you listen to KFAI, it's 24/7 radio. It's different language, different cultures, beautiful music, beautiful programs, 24/7. My guest today is Paula Gwynn from People Center Clinic, and we are talking about, discussing about looking back at how the community of Cedar Riverside and beyond that. I remember Alina, my friend Pence, Allison Pence is a great part of this. Our coach, Coach Jennifer Weber, the Red Cross, Cedar Riverside, NRP, Posteo, so many, over 30 people, organizations were really involved. Cedar Riverside, Cedar Cultural Center, we'll talk about the musical event they did to raise money. I also want to shout out to say thank you to Mary Lou True from Augsburg University. I want to also thank the Dean of Augsburg College for donating personally $1,000 to the effort. There are so many people to appreciate, and most I really appreciate is people who saw the message of collecting money from People's Center Clinic, and as far away from around the world, from our state, from the country, donated to this effort and made it possible. We say thank you. Paula, that was a disaster. Five people died. Families were devastated. It was not easy to see those in those, but what happened? The gathering, how people came together, how people donated, how people volunteered was amazing. I want to talk about, I remember the day we were working with SNABI. By the way, SNABI is Somali American Business and Professional Organization. They have local chapters, and their chapter of Minnesota worked with us and donated money and material that were highly needed. And I vividly remember that day we were making the distribution, distributing everything, all those material to the community. I did an amazing job, you know. Everybody else was working, but I was taking videos. I have to admit that. Susan, I remember. Susan, Herbert, Susan, was it you who brought the daughter, or was it Susan?
We both brought our daughter.
Yes, I remember, and also I brought my daughter. So yeah. I remember young ladies also from Subeda, and others from Hennepin County Library Youth Leadership in the neighborhood. They were also there. So when I look back those videos, when I look back those pictures, people carrying sacks of goods from cars, mm-hmm. You know, carrying in, just setting it up, distributing all those things. And you look at all those people that I've never met before. Mm-hmm. It was the most beautiful picture I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. What was your take on that day?
Well, it was amazing. I think that I'll say, especially to the folks at Snappy, boy, did they organize that event. Like, they took the lead. They brought volunteers on force, and they had it streamlined. They were helping people try to find the right size coats and helping direct them. And so it was a really engaging and personal experience. And you're right. Everybody just came together. And I know that my daughter and I felt very welcomed, and we were happy to be able to support. And it just, that sense of community, even if we didn't know each other, it was just, it was palpable. You could feel it.
Yeah, it was amazing. Yeah. Paula, thank you very much. At the end of this topic, we'll move on to COVID and what's happening and the role of our People's Center Clinic. Mm-hmm. But before we move on, I want to say on behalf of the committee, Paul will say too, I say thank you to everyone who donated money, mm-hmm. Time, material, efforts. And I think now we have a model of how things work in case, God forbid, but in case something happens. So every one of you, thank you very much. And we will remember this. And this conversation about that work, it's not beginning today, and it's not the end of it. Mm-hmm. So I would love to meet many of you, and like Paula, talk about your experience, your perception, how that affected you, what kind of experience, what you will do with this in life. We will talk about that. So please reach out to me or to KFAI to schedule an interview in the future to share this experience and our to the people who donated to us or to you. We are giving them, telling them our stories. So thank you, Paula. I appreciate your leadership on this. And now let's talk about COVID-19. COVID-19 has changed the world. Is changing us in America and Minnesota. How it changed our lives. It's really something big. I think the last epidemic the country had, I'm not sure about the date, back in 1918, 1920, maybe World War I. So tell me overall what's happening with COVID.
Well, it is changing day to day, and we're learning so much through this process. We all know that we're supposed to stay home, mm-hmm. that right now we have a stay-at-home order. And really, that is the best thing you can do, because people can be asymptomatic. They can have COVID-19 and not be aware of it and then pass it on. And that's why people should stay at home. That's why they should wear masks. It's not about so much protecting yourself as it is protecting the community. It's that same spirit of looking after each other in this time. We've had to change our services drastically just to accommodate this. As the health clinic in this neighborhood, it's our obligation to serve people and to be there to help them through this. So we've been learning as much as we can, changing, adapting, doing all we can to ensure the safety of our community, our patients, as well as our team, so that they can be there to provide these services. But you know, we follow every day. I get the update from the Minnesota Department of Health, seeing the number of cases, and it's still going up right now. Mm-hmm. And I know that the governor and the administration, that they are being conservative and wanting to really make sure we do this the right way. And even today, having a visit from the vice president, you know, coming to see about this unique partnership between the government and then the Mayo Health Clinic to try to help us with the testing. So they can develop that, they can read the tests, they can distribute those. And really, since the tests have been released more readily, because we had had difficulty having enough to test people all the time, but now we have tests, and so we're able to offer testing to the community so we can find out more, because that's how we're going to know and understand the impact and understand what we're going to have to do in the future, because this won't be over when stay at home is over. This won't be over necessarily this summer, that this is going to be with us. Mm. It will return more than likely in the fall. Mm. And I think it does change life. You're right, for all of us. I think everything is going to look differently. I mean, I'm looking, you can see me and my basement converted office here working from home, but it's working. I think we're realizing what we can do. And as a clinic, we've been able to shift and offer telehealth, which is huge. We can offer medical behavioral health visits for people so they don't have to come in. And that's really important because there's so many of our patients that have chronic conditions, such as diabetes or hypertension. And we want to make sure that we're there to help them maintain that. And we're still adding services to help with that, but we want to keep them safe too. We fully expect there will probably be a surge of patients when they can start to come for more in-person visits that will need that. So we have to be ready for that as well. So I think the drive-up testing, we're also offering antibody testing. So yes, that's a blood draw. You have to actually come into the clinic for that one. We can't drive up for that one. Mm-hmm. But that's really helpful to find out maybe you had COVID-19 and you didn't realize it. And so you're able to know that. And that's really important. So we're really proud that we can be able to be out front. And we have had a line around the corner all day, every day that we've been doing this, since Saturday, trying to keep up with it. And our team's amazing. Just a huge shout out to everyone there, that they just jumped to it. They figured out a plan, how to do this, how to accommodate it, and make it safe and make it work. And they've been doing it. And so it's just remarkable. We'll all be glad whenever it's not this level of intensity, I think. But we're, until then, we're prepared and we're ready. So if people are interested and want to learn more, we've done some updates to our website and we'll continue to share information. But you can find out what you need to know about testing. Mm-hmm. We ask that people fill out a registration form. Just, you can fill it out and print it off at home and bring it with you. We just want to try to streamline it. But right now we ask that people be patient, that it just is a wait because a lot of people want to be tested. So just to be prepared for that. And we'll keep updating and doing what we can to provide the best services and information to the community.
Thank you. Paula, you mentioned at the website that you update all the information. What is the website?
So you just go to www.peoples-center.org. And there's a link right on the front page, right in the banner at the top, where you can get right to the COVID-19 information.
Thank you. For those of you in the audience who were not aware of the coronavirus testing in Cedar Riverside neighborhood or West Bank, the People Center Clinic, this testing, it's a drive-thru. Sometimes the line might be a little bit longer because of the need. And it started at People's Center Clinic on Saturday. Is that right, Paula?
That's right.
Yeah. So, Paula, could you share with us what times it and what dates, what days?
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. So we're able to offer testing right now during our regular clinic hours. So that looks like for us Monday through Friday from 8:30 a.m. to 5 p.m. Mm-hmm. And on Saturdays from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. So that's what we're able to do. If for any reason we don't anticipate running out of tests, if we should, we will make sure and share updates about that so people are aware. But that's when we're able to provide testing. And that's antibody as well. You just have to come in. Mm-hmm. I think if people want to and they don't maybe have access to the website and they want to call, you can get some of your information, mm-hmm. maybe make an appointment for that antibody test, or talk with one of our customer experience or patient experience guides. And so you can call 612-332-4973. And they can help you. They can answer questions. On the website, we've also linked to a tool that the Department of Health has created where you can do a self-assessment to see if you have symptoms of COVID-19. Mm-hmm. Because that's really important, that you don't necessarily need to get tested if you don't have symptoms. Yeah. That's still, right now, it's for the people who really are displaying those symptoms. So that's a good tool that you can use. And we have a link to that on our website as well. So we want to try to help people with that information and education about that.
So thank you. And Paul, you mentioned there's a link or tool that you can help us mm-hmm. Self-assess. see mm-hmm. if we have those symptoms. Because this resource is so expensive and not enough for everybody. Who, can any normal person just come in and say, I want to get tested? What are the suggestions people for to use this resource of drive-by drive-up testing? Mm-hmm. What symptoms do they have to have?
Well, so in the symptoms, we keep finding out new updates about symptoms as health professionals worldwide learn more about this. But some of the most common is a shortness of breath, coughing, that kind of dryness of fatigue. But there can be other symptoms, too, that I've heard as much as like a loss of sense of taste or smell.
Yes.
So that can be part of it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I heard that about 2 weeks from the community. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that also is part of it. Losing sense of smell and taste.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. And so, I think that it presents differently in different people, mm-hmm. and we're just learning. I think that certainly if you think you have symptoms, please call our clinic and we will talk through with you. That tool is great and it's helpful. I believe that it's the intention that the governor would like to see everyone in the state tested. Mm-hmm. So certainly the testing is available. And especially though, if you think you have symptoms, because that's when you want to identify it. You want to know so you can monitor it. There are folks that if they are at higher risk or they show complications, we want to make sure that you're aware if you do have COVID-19 so that you can seek additional care if you have a need to. But I think that people, they can just call. They can look on our website, go through the process and see if they think they have that. And again, antibody testing, that can be for anyone to figure out, especially if you think maybe I had this cough or something and I don't know, maybe this is what it was. That's what it's there for. And that's part of how we'll track it as well.
So there could be a lot of people who had it, but wasn't aware of it.
Right.
But if they come in and do the test inside?
The antibody test.
Antibody mm-hmm. test. Mm-hmm. That will, the doctor will be able to find out if they had it in the past, but they were not aware of it.
Yeah, the antibody test, what that does is your body produces antibodies whenever in a response to COVID-19, and this is a unique antibody.
Yeah.
So they can test for that, and that's how you'll know if you've had it. The idea, the hope is that once more people have this antibody, that there's what they call that increased of herd immunity, so that people are less likely to get it again, or maybe it won't be as severe. This is how, we have different viruses that are introduced into the community or into the world, and our bodies have to build up a tolerance. So that helps us too, I think, as we're thinking about people returning to work or returning to some of what felt normal lives that we were accustomed to. It's helpful to know. And you don't know. I mean, I had a cough. It's allergy season too. So, there's so much that other things could be. So there are a lot of unknowns there. So that's just a really important tool for us as well, just for the entire community prayer now. And again, if we have any kind of a resurgence of this throughout the coming months.
Yes. Before we go, hear this wonderful message. When we come back, I'll be asking Paula about who's eligible to take this test. Mm-hmm. Do you have to be a resident, U.S. citizen? Do you have to have insurance? What are the criteria for you to get tested? Or then we will also want to talk about what other services are available at this clinic after we hear this message.
Black immigrants and African Americans experience blackness in this country together. And filling out the 2020 census helps us build power for our communities. The census will ask questions like, do you rent or own? And how many people are in your household? The census will not ask questions about your immigration status, your bank account, or your social security number. For more information, go to bachi.org.
Lorsqu'il s'agit de bâtir des communautés, tous les Africains comptent. Il est temps de répondre à l'appel. Faites-vous compter pour ce recensement de 2020. C'est simple. Comptez juste toutes les personnes vivant avec vous et ne vous inquiétez pas. Les informations personnelles restent confidentielles. Nos chiffres ont une incidence sur le financement des besoins communautaires tels que les logements abordables.
Participez au recensement en ligne, par téléphone ou par courrier. Façonnez votre avenir. Commencez ici à 2020census.gov, payé par le Bureau de recensement des États-Unis.
Welcome back. This is Abdurizak Bihi from Somali Link Radio. And don't forget, Somali Link Radio is the only Somali Link, Somali radio that speaks English program that I am aware of in the whole country. So this is about me now. Okay. and we recently in February, we turned 3 years old. So we've been in 3 years every Tuesday. And I couldn't do this without volunteers who produce my show every Tuesday. And the list of the volunteers is ranked by my producer who actually organized that, Matt Finkel. Thank you. And other volunteers who really come in and help out, get all this important information to you while you are at home or at work. Today, my conversation was with and is with Paula Gwynn from People Center Clinic. And we've talked about the recent fatal fire at 630 building in Cedar Riverside neighborhood where the clinic is, and how the community came together and collaborated in a Minnesota tradition and actually addressed the issue to the best of their ability. I also want to mention along with that, that Cedar Cultural Center has played a role, not only this fire, but also in 2014 Happy New Year fire that also was fatal. Both instances, they did a concert, put together all these beautiful, amazing musicians to raise money for the victims. That is an amazing. And all the organizations, including Cedar Riverside NRP, Alina, Coach Weber, the Cedar Riverside Traveling Basketball Warriors, and the whole community, every other organization, Augsburg College, American Volunteers, Public Housing Staff, all and many others who came together, and we have had a chat on that. And now we are talking about COVID and COVID-19 drive-up testing that's new, just started on last Saturday, at People's Center Clinic. According to Paula, again, Paula, could you please say the dates people can come, and yeah, and what conditions they can come, like if what they've, what kind of feelings or symptoms they see?
Yeah, absolutely. So we're able to provide COVID-19 testing. So that's when you're displaying symptoms of COVID-19, which are shortness of breath, or fatigue, or coughing. And we have a whole list of those up on our website. And so I encourage you to check there. There's also a self-assessment tool that is really helpful that I mentioned earlier, where you can answer some questions, and that is from the Department of Health, and it helps you identify if you maybe need to be tested. So that's what we're offering as drive-up testing right now. So you don't even have to get out of your car. Our providers and our health coworkers, they will come right to the car. They will be in gowns and face shields and masks so that they can safely administer this test. So that's if you have symptoms. We have drive-up clinic, and that's Monday through Friday from 8:30 a.m. to 5 p.m. So those are during our normal clinic hours, and also on Saturdays from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. But in addition, another test we offer, so this is an antibody test, and that's offered in the clinic, and you can make an appointment for that. But you can come in, and it's a blood draw, and what they can identify from that is if you have had COVID-19. So there are two different tests. So it's for people who think maybe they've had it or want to be tested to see if they've had it in the past. Mm-hmm. And then also for people who are showing symptoms and think they have COVID-19 and they need to be tested. So we are able to offer both of those.
I know you are not a really medical doctor expert on this, but just in case, there are different reports. Some are saying if you had it, it won't come back to you. Some are saying it might. What do you think?
You know, I read the same reports too, and sit on calls, and, you know, I'm getting information from the Department of Health and the CDC, and that's where I look. And I think that the answer, I think, is that we don't entirely know, mm-hmm. that we're still learning about it, just as we discover new symptoms of it. Mm-hmm. That's the idea, is that hopefully you won't get it, or at least it won't be as impactful on you potentially. But we don't know. That's certainly the hope, I think, is that if you've had it, that you won't come down with it again. But we'll keep following that. And as we learn more, we'll share more so everybody can be prepared and we'll have that information.
Thank you. And about the other side of it, who is eligible? Who are their eligibility? Are there conditions to access, number one, the COVID drive-up testing? Or first that, then we'll talk about the general services at the clinic.
Well, so the testing, you know, that has already been ordered that one way or another, people won't have to pay out of pocket for that test. Mm-hmm. So we're all still learning exactly. Some part of this is related to the fact that we were very fortunate as a community health clinic, as we were of all federally qualified community health clinics throughout the country, to receive additional funds through the CARES Act, mm-hmm. which has helped us in providing those PPE, that personal protective equipment for our team, mm-hmm. to help us purchase tests, to help with the test shipping and reading. So because of that, we want to make sure that there's no hindrance. Mm-hmm. And so people don't need to worry. If you think you have COVID-19, we will walk you through that process to make sure, so that we don't want, that won't be any kind of a barrier for people to access that test. And for us as a clinic, part of that designation is a federally qualified community health clinic, which we've been for 50 years. You know, we plan to have big 50th anniversary party this year for the service that we've done, but things had to change. But for 50 years, what we've been providing is access to healthcare in communities that traditionally haven't received that care. And so we're committed to that. So in our community, no one's turned away because they can't pay for care. So we, again, we have a team that walks people through that process. We make sure you're able to access the healthcare and that the amount you can pay isn't a barrier. That's the same for the antibody test too. We'll work through that. Mm-hmm. I don't believe it has that same mandate as the COVID testing. Mm-hmm. Things may change with that. But again, just as that we have the sliding scale fee for people to access care, people who are uninsured or certainly can come. So we're open to people to come and we'll make sure that that works.
Thank you. And last question about COVID. What are the main things that, I know you said this million times, what are the main things that we are required as a residents of this community or all our communities to do to really keep themselves safe and others safe?
No, absolutely. And I don't think we can say it enough times. Mm-hmm. It's been several weeks and stay at home order, that stay at home mandate is really key. That really is critical. And it takes adjustment. And I know many of us are working with family and pets and teaching our kids from home, you know, with the support of the teachers. So it's different and that can be fatiguing, but it really is important to stay with that as long as the recommendations are there from the governor, that we want to make sure we honor that, because by staying home, we're just not helping increase that spread. And wearing masks, obviously, that's been something, and there's all kinds of resources about how you can make them from things at home. And we have people who are making masks out of cloth and they're becoming more available. There was a little bit of a run on that before when we were trying to respond to this at first, but they're becoming more available. But what that helps with is it just catches any of those little particles, because this is spread when we cough or when we sneeze. And so what we can do to not spread that by covering our face whenever we do have to go out, it's not just really about protecting us, but it's about protecting other people. So those are really important. Washing your hands, gosh, that's, you can't emphasize that enough. If for some reason water is not available, use hand sanitizer. I know at several stores, like when I go to a grocery store now, one of them has a hand sanitizer right when you walk in and when you walk out. So if you've touched other things, just making that a habit, that's just really important. So those are really, if you do have to go out, that socially distancing, right, staying apart, and making sure you allow that space and honoring that. But also, I'll say, just because it's good for us to maintain our mindset and our well-being and our health overall, as the weather turns beautiful, do feel like you can get outside and go for a walk. You can go for a bike ride. That's encouraged. Just do it responsibly. But that's certainly, that helps to break up the day. It helps us to stay healthy and to keep a better attitude, I think. And as we come back to approach this, I know it helps me personally when I'm able to do that. So those are really the most important things that you can do.
Thank you. My last question, I hope it's my last. After we come back to this message, I'm going to ask you my what I think it might be my last question about care accessibility at People's Center Clinic. For example, languages. How many languages are East African languages spoken there? That's the question after we hear this message.
Are you an interpreter or translator? Have you heard of UMCHA, the Upper Midwest Translators and Interpreters Association? Well, we are a professional association that offers workshops and trainings with continuing ed credits, called CEUs, for interpreters and translators. We are also a local chapter of the ATA, the American Translators Association. Our mission is to improve the quality of interpreting, translating, and language resources in Minnesota, Wisconsin, Iowa, South Dakota, and North Dakota. Check us out at umtia.org or find us on Facebook and Twitter. Become a member today and come network with others in the field.
Lorsqu'il s'agit de bâtir des communautés, tous les Africains comptent. Il est temps de répondre à l'appel. Faites-vous compter pour ce recensement de 2020. C'est simple. Comptez juste toutes les personnes vivant avec vous et ne vous inquiétez pas. Les informations personnelles restent confidentielles. Nos chiffres ont une incidence sur le financement des besoins communautaires tels que les logements abordables.
Participez au recensement en ligne, par téléphone ou par courrier. Façonnez votre avenir. Commencez ici à 2020census.gov, payé par le Bureau de recensement des États-Unis.
Welcome back. This is Abdulrazak Bihi. I am still chatting with Paula Queen from People's Center Clinic, and we are coming to the end of our conversation. It won't be the last one. Every now and then we'll have an update and a health update from our healthcare providers. Paula, my last question is, tell me about accessibility for people from East Africa or other languages to get this test or services in terms of translation and language that the staff or other freelancers, are they available?
Absolutely. That's a great question, Behi. We do. This is a priority for us to work within the community and to help people navigate their healthcare. That it's vital to us, the work we do with interpreters, where they work various different languages that are spoken so that they can help communicate, so that there's not a barrier there whenever you're talking to your provider. We have staff that speak several different languages, so they're able to also help. They're able to help whenever you call in and you're trying to schedule an appointment. That's definitely something that we can accommodate and is important. So people can definitely access, the services are accessible.
Paula, you've been great. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me on, Behi. It was great.
I'm looking forward to have Karina, our current CEO, who actually is moving on, and our new CEO, Anne, to actually come to the studio and witness that change of guard and also say farewell to our beloved Karina Forrest. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello, welcome back. This is Abdulrazak Bihi. I'm again very grateful of Paula Queen from People's Center Clinic to share with us and with you about what's happening in the community and the availability of COVID-19 drive-up testing. Finally, I want to remind the community, especially in the East African community, this year we have, it's the The U.S. Census takes place every 10 years, and it's happening right now, though that stage of sending people to help you fill out the census is not there because of COVID. It's postponed because of COVID-19, but it's alarming to learn that our numbers are very down. Minnesota is one of the best top-rated states in the U.S. Census, somewhere 63 or 61 or 65. A percent nationwide, it's less than that. And if Minnesota is top, and why our communities are not doing this, we understand the barriers, language and cultural barriers. I know I'm working with Hennepin County and other members and colleagues and organizations. We're doing everything we can. COVID-19 is not an easy barrier. It's really huge. We can't go to homes. We can't help people fill out the paperwork like we were planning and love to do. But I'm talking to those members from East Africa or Africa or from communities that has been historically undercounted. We need to really innovate our game and reach out. And if you are listening, please reach out to the community and help in any way you can. There's one way if there's a language barrier at home. We've been asking parents to seek the help of their children, grown children that are in home to help them get counted. Why is it important to be counted? Because next 10 years, all the resources, jobs, opportunities, education, schools, libraries, everything, trainings, is having skills, free skills to get trained, to join and earn a viable wage. Everything depends on the resources that are being allocated for the next 10 years because of how many people of that community get counted. And that's very important for us in those communities that are really having a bad inequity in healthcare, in jobs, in opportunities, in education. We need to help our community to get counted. So please help out and thank you. You have a great night.
KPI.org.